You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Hi there, welcome to the show, bringing you the latest news and sharpest insight from around the world of horse racing every weekday. It is Friday, January the 22nd. Lots to get in today. We will be in Florida at Gulfstream Park with Brittany Ayrton ahead of the Pegasus World Cup. We'll be in Hong Kong with J.A. McGrath, the Croc, ahead of Golden 60's bid to extend his extraordinary winning sequence. We will be taking stock of all the news in European racing this week. The Charles Burns affair, the difficulty of getting horses to Cheltenham. We'll be checking in with the Chief Executive of Horse Racing Ireland, Brian Kavanagh. But we start with the big race in Britain on Saturday, and that is the Clarence House Chase at Ascot. I've been talking to connections of leading fancies during the course of the week here. We haven't yet heard from connections of Politologue. Paul Nichols will be along very shortly. He is fascinating about how he has turned this horse's career round and the work regime that the horse now has. So Paul in a moment, but Lydia Hislop first of all, for what is a busy Friday show. And Lydia, I'll start by asking you whether, as he seeks another Grade 1 victory tomorrow, we should start paying this Politologue a little bit more respect.
Yes, I think so. In terms of racing post ratings, if you want to go to those, he's achieved a 170 plus figure four times. That's much better than any of his rivals he faces here today. He is in an era where you've got Altior, of course, that he's suffered by comparison to that. And reputationally, but not yet with any proof, he's also in an era against Chacun and Persuas. And there's been Min as well, I suppose, to take into account. So he is in a strong enough era that has, and there have been reasons why the spotlight might have fallen away from him. But in terms of what he can produce when he's at his best, it is right up there with the elite level horses, and his last two performances have been up there.
And I posed the same question to his trainer, Paul Nichols.
Yeah, well, yeah, he's a proper horse, isn't he? You know, he's got a good record for a long time. He stayed sound and tough, and his enthusiasm now is as good as ever, and that's what always, I think, stands out. A good horse, it can keep that consistency and keep having the appetite for the game and producing the goods.
But it's interesting, I was looking through all his racing post ratings, and the last twice he's run, he's produced his best, 173 yeah. RPRs both times. Now that's into the realms of the really great horses.
Well, I think he's at his best. I mean, if you saw him, how he looks at the moment physically and the way he's been operating, I've got no doubt he's in the best place he's ever been. He obviously had a few little issues at one stage for a short time, bleeding, which was getting in the way of things a little bit. And we sorted things out, tweaked it, got his enthusiasm back, and now he's in really good place.
I mean, how do you do that? I mean, do you have to medicate them and then take them off the medication? How do you no. cure a bleeder?
No, we just change the routine of what we do, and it's hard to explain really, but you just do different things that you think of. Like this morning, for example, like his last day before he'd run, he's been doing lots of work. Instead of perhaps doing two canters up the hill or something like that, what he's done today, he's done a little canter trot warm up, 5 furlong sprint, and then when he trotted up the road alongside the hill instead of cantering up it. So we do a lot of trotting up the road afterwards and before he works, then rather than cantering up the hill, just keep him off for some reason off the hill where you're not putting that much pressure on his lungs, and do lots of steady work and sprinting, or just different things that just seem to work with him. You know, he never stops. I mean, he's done quite a bit today, he did a lot yesterday. You just got to get him very, very fit, and for some reason, I mean, you look at him, he looks as big as a bull. He looks actually fat. He's got so much condition and strength about him. That's what you want to see.
But so you get him fit by doing lots and lots of different things and keeping the variety up, rather than just like pounding him the same way every single day, which would then put too much pressure on his lungs too quickly.
Well, they all do that. They all do think different things every day. But I find over the years, the horses that do tend to bleed, if you do three canters up the hill every day and work them hard, you know, it's not though they're not going quick, but just three times up the hill to get that fitness high, is actually some of them will have a little bleed after a third canter. So you keep them away from the hill and do different things so you don't get them bleeding at home, which he doesn't do now. And it just gets him. I mean, Tidal Bay was a great example of a horse who, when I took him on, was bleeding. We got him through that and did different things with him. And look where he was when he was 11. He was winning Lexus chases and hurdle races and Bet365 Gold Cups because he got through that point of bleeding. And I think in his day, when he was labelled as being ungenuine, he used to have his head in the air. It was because he used to bleed.
Mm. And he couldn't breathe properly and his lungs had blood in them, yeah.
Yeah, so you know, do a wind up, sort that out, get them, stop them bleeding, and then you're away, you know. You get a totally different horse, which you're bound to be.
The other thing I thought was quite interesting about Politolog is you had a hood on him for a bit and then you took it off. And actually, since he's had the hood off again and you could take it off, he's looked a different ball game again.
Yeah, well, he used to get very stressed at the races, especially at Cheltenham, a place where there was, you know, at the festival when there was all the atmosphere and the noise and the razzmatazz and everything. He used to get really stressed and run his race before he ran. Now, whether that was because he was stressing because he knew he might bleed when he was racing or just because he was a stressy horse, it didn't help him. And you know, used to get him on the course. He wasn't easy. You remember one year, I think the lad, he didn't break their arm when they let go of him in the parade. He was a complete idiot. And so what we do now, we put the hood on him in the pre-parade from the minute he leaves his stable, take it off when he canters down to the start or at the start, you know, the red hood, which you're allowed to do. And that seems to suit him well. But for whatever reason, and I still think that ties in with the bleeding, he's much more relaxed now and he's not worrying about it.
Yeah, exactly. That figures. I remember standing next to you in the paddock when he made his, I think it was his British debut, and he darted one way and Sam Twiston Davis went off the other way. And look on your face, you were like, oh my God, what have we got here? Yeah. As you had to go right back to the drawing board.
Yeah, well, he's been a challenge in lots of ways. All the good ones are from the start. Because that day at Cheltenham, like you say, went wrong. And then remember the day he jumped the last entry in the grade one, went two strides and went upside down. He's always had a few little challenges and things, but a lot of that's behind him now. And I do think he's in the best place and he's the best horse he's been since we've had him.
And could you now start to compare him to some of those really brilliant two-milers you've had? I'm thinking of Azertiop, who raced in the same colours. I know Mastermind is a bit of a stretch, but you know, you've had some of the very best. Could you, if you had them all in the same era, would he have been up there and competitive?
I've got no doubt about it. The thing with him, he's probably sounder than most of them. He's stayed sound and enthusiasm for longer. I mean, Azertiop had a few little issues. He was very good, but you know, he didn't last forever. And the same with Mastermind. One thing with this lad, Touchwood, is he stayed sound and he kept his enthusiasm. Although he's 10 now, he's probably got as much ability and as good as now than when he was, you know, 7 or 8. And yeah, he must be up with the best. You know, he's won at Tingle Creek, he's won at Champion Chase, 2 Tingle Creeks now, Champion Chase. You know, that's good races to win. And you know, sometimes people say, oh well, this didn't turn up that day, but you can only beat what turns up and you only keep on winning and keep that enthusiasm. That's what he's so good for.
Do you think it's pretty straightforward tactically tomorrow? Does Harry Cobden just get out there and get on with it?
Yeah, just do that. But if someone wants to go quicker, then that's fine. You know, as long as they're going to a good gallop, he jumps well, he can get someone wants to give him a lead. You know, in a lot of ways, if someone gives a horse a lead, that's ideal. There wouldn't be too many would have enough speed probably to lay out with him if he really want to gallop over the first two, and he wouldn't necessarily want to. But he is versatile. As long as they're going a nice gallop, it doesn't really matter. He can make it or just get a lead.
Paul Nichols there, and Lydia, just when you thought you knew everything about a horse, he does deliver you with a little more information, and I enjoyed listening to that.
Yeah, it's very rare that we get that kind of detail from trainers, and I think I'd urge them to be more detailed in terms of that kind of thing. Quite often it's not the moment, you know, they've just won a race, there isn't time to go into it. But when there is the opportunity to explain exactly how a horse is brought to peak condition, particularly when they're different to the normal run of things, I think it's really valuable information, and it just gives an insight into what exactly it is that they do. And I think I'm just struck by how individualised Politolog's training programme is and how much thought Paul Nichols has clearly given to this individual that he trains. And it's just very impressive to hear, really.
How do you see the race panning out tomorrow?
Well, I see Harry Cobden going out in front on Politolog, and he will have the task of setting a strong enough pace to make sure it's a test, because obviously the horse is a strong stayer at the trip, but not too strong to let in the likes of waiting patiently. I think that Politolog has 4 examples of RPR ratings of 170 plus, whereas Waiting Patiently, I think, only has a couple, and Defi de Soya only 1. So in terms of delivering a high standard of form Politolog not only does it more often, he's also done it more recently. That his last two starts are his best two starts, the win in the Queen Mother Champion Chase and the win in the Tingle Creek. Whereas Stefan de Soy is on a retrieval mission. He pulled up last time we saw him in the Schlur and he was only fourth, really dull performance in the Queen Mother Champion Chase. Waiting Patiently does come here off the back of one of his best ever performances, the second in the King George. But I do think he really does need a little bit further than the 2 mile one that he'll get at Ascot this Saturday to give of his best these days. I know he ran really well in the Tingle Creek, but that was an end to end. I described it on Road to Cheltenham last night as a tag team gallop. You had the headlong Gornilla, and then when that horse had given out, Underso took over, and that took all the way virtually to the line when Defi de Soy took over. So that's what needed to drag Waiting Patiently into third. I don't think he's going to get that set of circumstances here. And I would just throw in Fanny Andestreval, because I don't think we know how good this young six-year-old is, but he's trained by Venetia Williams and has a handy-looking handicap mark. And yet last time she ran him in a grade two, and this time she's running in a grade one. And we know that Venetia is not somebody who squanders a handicap mark lightly. And so that does suggest that this horse has got a high level of ability. I think he's hinted at it on the track as well. I think he was caught out by the downhill fence at Cheltenham last time. And I think he'll be helped by the fact that as this race gets going, none of Ascot's races are sighted like that at the latter stage. Stages. And so his low slung style of jumping when things start to get hot might not be such an issue.
And the fact that Charlie Deutsch goes to Ascot to ride Fanny Andestreval rather than to Haydock to ride the hot favourite Royal Pagai and, you know, possible grade one horse at Cheltenham in the Peter Marsh might be an indicator in itself.
I agree with that. I think all the signals are there. Now, clearly, he has not. This horse has yet to prove it, and he's got to prove it. He's against three horses that have proved it in the past, and Politolog, who's proved it again and again. So he's just a player. He's a horse not to dismiss lightly, I think, in that field.
Now, there are a lot of interrelated stories today about when people might get back on a race course, when race courses might start getting back on an even keel, speculation about April, May, with thinking probably not for Aintree, definitely not for Cheltenham. What, in fact, worries you the most or preoccupies you the most about what we've got to look forward to over the next few weeks?
I'm starting to get concerned about whether the upsurge in jump racing as we know it traditionally, i.e. International competition from Cheltenham and onwards, Aintree and Punchestown, whether that is going to be able to be replicated this year. I suspect it's not going to be. And I think the best case scenario is that we're going to have reduced numbers of horses coming over from Ireland. I don't want to be alarmist at this stage because I do still think there's a lot of water to flow under the bridge. I do still think with the vaccine rollout and the tracking of the pandemic that things could be very different. But I also think, you know, we've heard from Willie Mullins. He has counted out the idea of doing what Aidan O'Brien did during 2020, and that is essentially sending some staff over to Britain, having themselves isolate for the period that they have to do the quarantine immediately afterwards, and basically having a satellite team over in Britain. Understandably, Willie Mullins says that he can't do that because it's just 4 days in March. It's not a whole season, and he needs his staff to be able to, you know, to carry on. But I do think that Irish trainers are going to have to start thinking about contingency plans and how they manage bringing large numbers over. Now, I know they're dipping their toes in the water. Willie Mullins brought his mare over to Market Raisin's Black Type Bumper last Saturday. Jessica Harrington is obviously bringing a horse over tomorrow to Ascot. They have been dealing with the Brexit difficulties, but also they'll be getting a handle on what it's going to be like to do this at scale, and that is what Cheltenham is, of course.
Well, we don't just throw the show together. I've been talking to Brian Kavanagh, who is very, very good at coming on whenever asked, the chief executive of Horse Racing Ireland, and this is his latest update on COVID, Brexit and the like.
Yeah, I think we're better than where we are before Christmas, Nick. We have a free trade agreement and we now know the parameters of what we're dealing with. And look, there's no other way of putting it. There are extra complications with moving horses, both in terms of paperwork and in terms of potential customs or VAT issues.
But we're now dealing with the reality of those. We know what we have to deal with. And as you said, Willie had a test runner last week and Jesse this week. And we're talking to them about, you know, where there was difficulties, where there was challenges. So working through that from a Brexit point of view and the practicality of that. And of course, then you have the safety aspect of it from a COVID point of view, which we're working with the authorities in Cheltenham. And you know, that's a constantly shifting sands. But I'm confident now that we'll get there by the time Cheltenham comes around. And you know, to have the two runners in Britain, you know, last Saturday and this Saturday, is very important to sort of show that it can be done and to find out what needs to be streamlined or tweaked.
I'll deal with the Brexit thing in a minute, which is a pain in the neck, but possibly not an insurmountable challenge. COVID is different. What exactly are the COVID protocols at the moment as regards the movement of people, i.e. the workforce in the stable, over to the UK for an event?
Well, there's a requirement at the moment for a 14-day quarantine period on return, on isolation. So I think what boat trainers have done is they sent the horses with transport companies and used UK-based staff. That isolation requirement has been in broadly since Christmas. And I think trainers feel that by doing that, that it's very hard for them to require staff to isolate for 14 days on return. That's a current requirement. Whether that will still be the situation come Cheltenham time, we'll have to see. But that's not really that different, Nick, from what we had, you know, further afield during the year, you know, when Irish horses were sent to Australia or to America or to other countries. And some trainers chose to base some staff over there, or a pool of staff to manage around that.
What I want to get at, Brian, is do you think that trainers are going to have to accept that they're going to have to move staff, either move staff over to the UK earlier or use a UK based satellite staff in order to facilitate large strings at Cheltenham?
I'm not sure we're at that stage yet. I think some of the larger trainers may choose to use that option, but you have to also believe with the increased level of vaccination and with the profile of the pandemic, you would have to hope the situation will be improved in March, and it may be that some smaller trainers will feel that the whatever quarantine arrangements are in place at that time are manageable. So you may end up with a combination of both. But as I said, it would be far too early to speculate that. We're still 8 weeks out. And, you know, if you turn the clock back 8 weeks and see where we were, you know, it was a different environment then. And you have to hope it will be the same, you know, come middle of March.
And is there anything that HRI can actively do, if we're going back to the Brexit situation, to ameliorate the situation there when it comes to paperwork and so forth?
Yeah, I think there's a bedding in process on all the Brexit issues. We all knew that it was going to be, you know, a greater level of paperwork, and you know, we're working with the authorities, you know, to see how that can be streamlined, whilst, you know, observing the rules and the requirements, whether some of it can be done away from the point of entry or the point of departure, done, you know, at the trainer's premises or at the breeder's premises. We're talking to the tax authorities. I know Cheltenham are talking to the British tax authorities in relation to VAT issues and stuff like that. So we can facilitate that. And as I said, it's easier now, and easier is not the right word, but it's a better issue to be dealing with now, where you're dealing with these tangible problems. Before Christmas, before there was a free trade agreement, there was just a huge degree of uncertainty. At least we have some certainty now. We may not like it, but we've got to work with it, and again, I'm sure, you know, pragmatic approaches will be found.
Brian Kavanagh there, the Chief Executive of Horse Racing Ireland. And Lydia, although Brian Kavanagh is confident that things can move within the next 6 to 8 weeks, I still think, from what he was saying, that to your point, people need to be prepared. And I just wonder whether, if say you've got 40 or 50 horses bound for Cheltenham, you might take that down to 20 or 25. I'm just guessing.
I'm just guessing, and that's the kind of thing the kind of calculations, the kind of pragmatic thinking that I'm expecting people to have to make, because normally you know, Willie Mullins, Gordon Elliott in particular, but also Henry de Bromhead and other yards, would bring over huge numbers of horses and were able to do so. Whether they'd be prepared or able to do that in these circumstances, I think comes under some doubt. They might have to be more pragmatic in terms of the horses that they bring over and only target, you know, either particular races or have a particular horse in mind, a particular horse's development or campaign in mind, and therefore that horse makes the cut. I don't think you can just be sort of swim along with the tide with this. I think some active solutions are going to have to be brought together, and that, I mean, I don't doubt that they probably, you know, are happening over there, and that Brian Kavanagh is talking to trainers and trying to get them to think in this way, and trainers probably of their own accord over in Ireland are doing this. It's just that we don't know about it yet.
Let's just talk about the Charles Burns case. Now, the Irish Horse Racing Regulatory Board are not going to comment on the specifics of this, probably until after an appeal is heard, but certainly not before the appeal, the date by which you have to lodge your appeal, has passed. So we're not going to get any further comment, but it doesn't stop us commenting on the nature and gravity of the situation.
The most shocking thing, without any form of doubt, is that Kevin Bruder was at such risk on board Viking Horde on that day, as was the horse itself, as were the horses and jockeys that they were riding against. And it is shocking that anybody with a connection to horse racing would be prepared to risk something as fundamentally serious, that fundamental risk to human primarily and animal life. And it must be, you know, if you accept, and we have to, I think, that Lynn Hillier has asserted in the evidence to the panel that there is a connection between the administering of the tranquilizer ACP and the lay bets. If we accept that was done by somebody with that purpose, then that is shocking, because that person has access to sacrosanct areas of a horse racing yard, a stable yard at a racecourse, and that just continues to be so overwhelmingly shocking.
Let's talk about Aidan O'Brien's Filly's Mile mix-up. It has finally been resolved to the tune of a £4,000 fine for O'Brien. He's held his hands up. He's apologised profusely. He's not sought to blame COVID, but it was certainly a mitigating circumstance. Lydia, are there questions to answer for the regulator about tightening up protocols so that this cannot happen, even if a trainer makes a mistake?
Definitely. I think so. They obviously had tightened up their ID checks as a result of two incidents in the six-month period between 2017 and 2018. And the panel does make reference to those checks having been in place. But unfortunately, the loophole that this exposed was that although horses are checked when they get off the lorry and into the stables and from the stables into the pre-parade ring, if you have a situation where two horses or more horses are from the same yard being saddled by the same people, there isn't a check between the saddling, the pre-parade ring, and going into the parade ring with the correct number cloth on. So the BHA has talked about, they have done essentially spot checks at higher profile races since October as a result of this. But clearly, and I think they accept from what they've gone on to say, that isn't good enough, because it's not just because it's a Group 1 waste that it's important, although, you know, obviously that means that it has a higher profile impact. But in terms of making sure that the right horse has got the right number cloth and the right jockey on and is breaking from the right stalls is as important in the Filly's Mile Group 1 as it is in a seller. So this has to be an across-the-board check. Now, obviously, at the moment, the BHA is under pressure from the industry, under pressure from the COVID impacted world to cut costs in according to the amount of money that is available, and they are stretching their resources already. A reduced number of personnel are allowed on track. Those reduced numbers of personnel are having to do multiple roles, and they're having to stretch to additional roles. You know, social distancing has to be overseen in order to what's the word I'm looking for, to convince government and to reassure government that racing is carrying on within strict COVID profiles. So that has to be done. So there's already extra work that fewer people are having to do. But nonetheless, this remains of paramount importance. And I think they can target it to some degree because obviously they have those other two checks that carry out already. And this would seem to be most likely to happen when two or more horses come from the same yard or are being saddled by the same person. So it could be targeted, but clearly when the BHA says there's a longer term piece of work that needs to be done, they do need to do that work and they do need to bring it into play as soon as possible.
Of course, one of the curious things about this case is that neither of the horses was disqualified, which is probably the oddest bit of, about the whole thing. Can that be changed?
It's interesting, isn't it? It wasn't changed because the BHA rules don't permit for it to happen. And interestingly, Brant Dunche of the BHA attended an International Federation of Horse Racing Authorities, the IFHA, Harmonisation Rules Committee. And it was uncovered that no significant country around the world has rules to permit disqualification in this scenario if disqualification is deemed to be an appropriate measure. And they had a discussion about, you know, what would be the threshold for triggering that. You know, would it be the wrong breaking from the wrong barrier? That wouldn't be currently a mandatory disqualification. Having the wrong number cloth, would it be the wrong jockey? And of course, then you, with wrong jockey, you get into what was that jockey's particular instructions. You know, if say the jockey was riding a front runner, but he was under the impression that he was riding a horse that needed cover and had to be held up, then likely that horse's chances have been compromised as a result of the mix-up. And so at the moment, the IFHA Rules Harmonisation Committee had a healthy debate about where they should go with this rule. But it, as they talked about it, they realised it wasn't as straightforward as it might be. And that it's currently ongoing work. So they've all gone away to consider it and they will come back with a view. And there might be, as a result of that, even you would think it would be likely, some change to the rules that would be reflected worldwide.
Well, if you're striving to find some degree of normality anywhere in the world, the likely place you might find it is Florida, where restrictions may not be quite as stringent as they are elsewhere. And Florida Gulfstream Park stage the Pegasus World Cup and the Pegasus World Cup Turf Invitational on Saturday night. You'll be able to catch it live on Sky Sports Racing in the UK, and of course you'll be able to see it in the US on NBC Sports. And my NBC colleague Brittany Ayrton joins me now to talk about the Pegasus. Just how does it feel there, Brittany? Is it the Pegasus build-up that we're used to, or is it somewhat affected?
Well, it's not quite the same, of course, without Nick Luck being here.
Well, that's the correct answer, obviously.
Right? No, the energy, of course, is not the same. But I will say, coming from California, where we're on complete lockdown, you come to Florida and things are a bit more open, you know, somewhat indoor dining. And of course, Gulfstream Park continued to race through the entirety of the pandemic because of those stringent safety protocols they've put in place. And those are still in place. And I'm looking forward to the fact that one constant we have are two really good races. Are we lacking a star in each race? Yes. But could we see a star come out of it? Of course. They're very competitive events, full fields, and there's just a lot of storylines that you can take away with some of these contenders.
Okay, so if there is a horse that is going to break through and we are going to have to take seriously on the global stage as an international star, which horse is it going to be? I mean, let's talk about the big race first of all, the dirt race, mile and an eighth on the dirt. Nick's go was so impressive in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. I guess everybody just wants to see him do something like that again.
That they do, and they want to see him do it at an additional distance away from Keeneland, because two of those three spectacular performances that we saw now underneath Brad Cox's care were at Keeneland. The track was playing fast on Breeders' Cup Day. He had a very impressive victory with fast fractions, gate to wire. Can we see him do it again? Yes, I think we can. A couple of the pace contenders were taken out of this race, including Charlatan, who's likely going to the Saudi Cup. So he could have a loose lead and he could just run away with it. And Brad Cox, all he keeps saying about this horse is he is pure class. So could we see Nick's go jump to the next level and be considered one of the top older handicap horses? Absolutely.
What's the play in the race for you, do you think?
I think there are so many different directions that you can go. It's a unique configuration because it's a mile and an eighth. So outside post positions are really tough. So I think that that hinders the chances a bit of Code of Honor, a horse I have always liked, but I don't think completely lived up to expectations. He's in post position 10. So I think Tyler Gaffalione, who's riding him, is going to have to work out a sneaky good trip from that outside post position. I would love to see a victory by Kiss Today Goodbye. Say that 12 times. Kiss Today Goodbye for Eric Krulejack and John Sonderecker. John Sonderecker has been a fan of this game for decades. This is his first graded stakes winner, and it's a horse that's really coming into his own. And Eric Krulejack is a small barn, but he's a true horseman on the West Coast. And you get Mike Smith aboard, who, of course, won aboard Arrowgate in 2017. He's an absolute outsider, but I love the story behind it. Sleepy Eyes Todd, I think, is worth mentioning though. Nick, for Miguel Angel Silva, how about this horse racing at 9 different racetracks in 2020?
Yeah, he's been around. I mean, considering the constraints of the year, I'm just having a look at where he's run this year, and he started off at Houston Fairgrounds, Fauna Park, Lone Star, Charlestown, Santa Anita, Keeneland, and Gulfstream Park. It's practically 9 different states, never mind 9 different tracks,
with 9 different jockeys.
I mean, that is insane.
I know. So there's another cool story, but he's shown up and he's 1-for-1 at Gulfstream Park. So he obviously likes the track. It can be a quirky track. So I think that's definitely something in his favor. Like I said, these are competitive races. If Nick's Go does not blitz the field, it could be anybody's race.
Can we talk about the turf race? And can we talk about the 3-horse, please? Because we could get a reprise, couldn't we, of your most famous television moment?
Oh, gosh, nobody needs to see that. When I looked at the rundown for the show, I was hoping that wouldn't come up somewhere. Everyone's
yeah, right.
Of that video. I would love to make a new one, though. Yes, that would be wonderful if Storm the Court gave us that opportunity again.
Yeah, in case anyone has just landed from Mars, this was Brittany celebrating, quite rightly, as were the rest of us, when her father Peter won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile with the outsider Storm the Court in 2019. And Storm the Court is now reinvented as a turfer.
Well, it makes sense, right? His father, Court Vision, won the Breeders' Cup Mile at a big price for Dale Romans, and he kind of has that build. So he ran a big race for us last time out in the Mathis Brothers Mile. He's the type of horse that touts himself in the morning when he's doing well. So the connection saw fit once he got the invitation to send him out here. And they always thought the more distance, the better, because those internal fractions that he could be setting would be a little bit more to his liking, unlike the 46-2 that he set last out going a mile.
So you think he's got a squeak? Who is the horse that sets the standard in the race, do you think?
Well, Colonel Liam for Todd Pletcher. Todd Pletcher has 3 in the race, the top 2 choices on the morning line, and then Social Paranoia. But Colonel Liam was incredibly impressive last time out right here at Gulfstream Park. So he's the morning line favorite, and I say that lukewarm. He's 7-2. But this horse, based off of that last effort, could be any type. It only seems like there's upside for this horse, whereas he's facing some hard-knocking older horses. Mike Maker looking to defend his title. Aquaphobia is a grade 1 winner, but he is 8 years old. Another Twist of Fate is probably the outsider, if you want to call it that, outside of the Pletcher trainees for Peter Miller. He got his first turf victory last time out in really nice fashion underneath Joel Rosario, and I think he's going to be fairly close to the pace, which is not a very pace forward race when you look at it.
Brittany, have a great time in Florida. I'm very sorry not to be there this year, but try not to enjoy yourself too much, obviously. And we will be tuning in, and best of luck with Storm the Court.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. We miss you out here. It's not quite a party without you.
And now time for a second visit this week to Hong Kong. Really pleased to check in with Jim J.A. McGrath. And Croc, Sha Tin staged some excellent racing this Sunday. It'll be Sunday morning UK time. And I guess we should really focus around Golden 60, because he's got claims to being one of the best horses in the world now. And he heads the cast list in the Stewards' Cup at 8:05 British time.
Yeah, he's a terrific horse, Nick. He's won now 14 out of 15 starts. He's going for his 12th win in a row, only been defeated once. And, of course, he's formed a great combination with a local hero in Vincent Ho, a young talent who's come through the ranks and still improving all the time and wants to improve. And he's really going the right way, as they say. But Golden 60, he's by Medaglia d'Oro. He's an Australian-bred Medaglia d'Oro. And Vincent rides him like a motorbike. And I'll tell you what, he performs like one. He can round the field very, very quickly. He's got a terrific turn of foot. And he's been most impressive so far. Top of the ratings and will be, again, extremely hard to beat in the Stewards Cup.
Yeah, he comes out top of the ratings by quite some way. Is there a dark horse in there that might give him most to think about?
I think Casper Founds might be able to produce one in, when you say a dark horse, one that's really fairly exposed, and that's Southern Legend. He's a very, very consistent performer, and he's second top rated or equal second top rated. A very decent horse, and Casper loves producing these horses to try and knock off the champion. He's done it before with this horse, actually, with Beauty Generation, the previous champion in Hong Kong. So he'll be hoping that he can knock off the big name again. He also runs a horse in the race called Rise Star, who's been off for 13 months with a tendon injury. He's come back. He's had a couple of trials. He looks okay, but an enormous task first up after such a long layoff. But he's a horse who's going the right way as well, and maybe later on for the Hong Kong Cup, later on in his preparation.
And then 35 minutes later, 8:40 UK time, the Hong Kong Classic Mile, massive prize money again for this race. A little more open, bringing together horses from both hemispheres that people might be familiar with.
Yeah, some terrific names here, and this is the first leg of the four-year-old Triple Crown. And when I say, from here, this part of the world, Russian Emperor, ex-Belly Doyle, who won the Hampton Court at Royal Ascot, seventh in the Derby. You've got the Summit, who was runner-up in the French Guineas and Peter Jockey Club. So they're interesting from this part of the world. From Australia, you've got an Australian Derby-placed Turbian Diamond, who ran as Eric the Eel down there. He's by Olympic Glory, well named. So Turbian Diamond, he's already won a race in Hong Kong, and he certainly has measured up very, very quickly. And you've got Shadow Hero for David Hayes. Shadow Hero is a dual Group 1 winner in Australia, including the Randwick Guineas, and he's been fitted with cheek pieces for the first time. David trying to get him back on track. He's just not sparking totally at the moment, but this will be the big test for him, see if he can do something here.
My thanks to Jim, my thanks to Brittany before him, and we are now going to try and work out, with the flat turf season just a few weeks away, which horse might be the leading first season sire. Well, our partners at Fitzdares have opened a book on this, as they do each and every year, and they're doing it in partnership with Weatherby's, another one of our partners, and their Global Stallion app. Ed Sharkey from Fitzdares is with me now. I bet you have quite a bit of fun doing this, don't you?
Hi, Nick. Yeah, we have great fun putting this all together. We normally always do it around January, February, when it's a bit of downtime in the racing. And yeah, it's always a really fun market to price up. And I think this year in particular, we really enjoyed it, as it seemed very competitive and a particularly good bunch of horses, which any of them could win, really. We've got Profitable 3-1 favourite, and then we've got 4-1 Kotai Glory, 4-1 Caravaggio, and 4-1 Churchill. The early money for us has been on Kotai Glory. We took a £1,000 bet at 5-1 on him to win. But yeah, we made Profitable our favourite, just because he was such a good printer back in the day. By Invincible Spirit, I'm sure he's going to have plenty of early types. And yeah, he's represented by that number. But yeah, Caravaggio wouldn't be far behind, being by Scat Daddy. He was unbeaten at 2. And ironically, he actually beat Mamus in the Coventry when he won the Coventry. So that was quite interesting. 4-1.
Yeah, there's 4-1 Churchill as well. You'd have thought his are going to be maybe slightly deeper into the season.
I think so. Yeah, when I had a little look about the last sort of 7-8 winners of first season sire, I came up with a few quite interesting trends. I noticed that the key thing, you had to run at least 5 times at 2, which was fine for Churchill, but you needed to have won a race over 5 furlongs. All the previous winners had run a race over 5 furlongs as 2, and Churchill didn't even win at 6. He won at 7. So going on those trends, that would put a line through Churchill.
So you're 3-1 profitable, 4-1 Caravaggio and Churchill, 5 Kotai Glory, who's standing at Tally Ho, the home of last year's winner Maymass. And you've seen a bit of money for Kotai Glory.
Yeah, I think he was a very early horse himself. I remember, I think he made his debut at Bath and then he ran in the Coventry. He might not have been sent the best mares as he was quite cheap, his stallion fee, but I think he'll have a lot of early types. And yeah, even if you're winning small races like maidens, novice races, nurseries, they all count in this market.
I think if I was having a bet in this heat, your prices, I'm mildly interested in the 12-1 about El Kabir, who's a horse by Scat Daddy, standing at Yeomanstown stud with the O'Callaghans. They don't make too many mistakes.
Yeah, he was a very interesting one. He was probably the one we found hardest to price up with him running his career in America. But like you said, he ticks a lot of boxes. He's a very fast horse. He's by Scat Daddy. He will have a lot of runners. Yeah, we haven't actually taken any money on him yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if that 12-1 was popular in the next few weeks and we might have to shorten him. There's also just mentioned a positive word for Ribchester. A lot of people were saying a lot of his horses look nice at the sales. But yeah, like I said, again, we haven't taken any money on him, but he could be one to watch in the market.
Well, thanks to all my guests today on this slightly extended edition. Lydia is still here with me. She's going to give you a tip, possibly for the weekend, in a few moments' time. I just thought I'd bowl up David Carr's piece in the Racing Post Ute again, as he's dangled that 5-day Cheltenham Festival bait again.
No! I think he points out the key difference, and that is that Royal Ascot have introduced handicaps as their new races, whereas when the Cheltenham Festival diluted their grade ones by introducing other grade ones, which meant the horses that would otherwise clash with each other were able to avoid each other, and due to the dilution, you could argue, and I would argue, of the rest of the season, that can happen for the entirety of some horse's career. It is much more impactful to introduce those kind of extra races, an extra day of racing at the Cheltenham Festival. And he sort of says that dilution gets trotted out, or I can't remember what the phrase it was that he uses, but there's a very good reason for that. You know, you can't just hand out these prizes and then for them to still have meaning. There has to be meaning behind this sport. And he points out that it would be financially beneficial. Well, you know, it might be in the short term, but in terms of making sure that that the sport remains relevant as a competitive sport, you know, that is the whole point of sport, it being real and actual competition, then that is much more fundamental, I'm afraid. And so it is no, 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 and again, no.
What about finding me on a much, much, well, I was going to say less important, but it's not less important because everybody needs a few quid at the moment. So if you could...
Well, I haven't been doing very well on this front lately, it must be. It was quite frustrating last time, the one that I put up last time. Anyway, I'm going with Clay in the 410 at Lingfield. Again, this is a horse that happens to be running today that I have been following. I can see that Liverpool Knight ran very promisingly on his debut, but he, comparatively, Clay has already achieved far more. He finished a close-up second to two horses that went on to win subsequently when he was dropped by a furlong and trip at Chepstow over 7. He goes up to 10 now, and I think he shouldn't be 4-1. He's third in the betting. He's got the best form. It's a price-based argument. It's also a horse I'm following.
Lydia, thank you very much. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget you can download and subscribe to this podcast in all the usual places wherever you should choose, and we will be back with you after the weekend. Hope you enjoyed that. Thanks to all my guests. That was Friday, January the 22nd. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary. Thank you.